Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Here we go.
Typical, disgusting display.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
Disgusting
display.
And it starts right now.
So, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Oh, we are excited today. Oh, God, we got one of our old friends is here from Family Guy, Kirker Butler. We cannot wait to talk to him. We can see his face right now on screen. I'm very excited to talk to him soon. But first, let's talk about the wonderful disaster that's happening out at Burning Man. Because this is just, I almost feel bad, but I don't. Like, every headline I've read about it, 70,000 stranded, flooded in. Like, it just brings me so much joy. And it feels a little wrong to feel that way. But, let's talk about how wonderful this is, that they're all just stuck in the mud, literally.
Well, have you been to Burning Man?
No.
I could see you having gone to, like, one of the early
I know.
Like, being dragged by a woman.
Oh, you're a drug addict? You could have been
first joke of the day.
You could have been, you know, just under the spell of someone who dragged you out there.
But Goldie, I need comfort. I need constant comfort, and that provides none.
Oh yeah.
Well, I've never been to a music festival.
No.
Right.
Because
wait, is that what it is? Is that what it is? We were talking about this before. Is it a music festival? Because I thought it was, but then it's like I'm hearing like it's just a festival of spirituality.
It's a gathering. It's like a gathering.
I thought it was music as well. And I asked,
well, they said Diplo was there. Isn't that
right?
A music person?
No, I think he was just hanging out. But I don't
so you
know.
Go there and there's no music?
I think there's like
is that part artists of it? They go, everyone's going to think there's music. And then we're going to shift it on them, and there's no music.
Okay,
and
here's
you're just bicycling around and eating peanuts and trading your stuff for other people's shitty stuff. It's like a flea market with no currency.
Yeah, it says, I'm just going to read without clicking on the actual website. It just says, Burning Man is a global ecosystem of artists, makers, and community organizers who create art, ..
Even worse.
I'll give you 6 Dogecoin if I can shit in your Ziploc bag.
I'll bet that's what
the type of trading
down,
that's
dude.
Going
it's
on
like
now.
Second joke of the day.
Oh, my God. I don't know how it could sound worse than a music festival, but what you just read sounded way worse.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Community leaders. It's like all the people you never want to hear from.
Well, they're going to find out. I mean, they're going to find out if they're leaders because it's going to be anarchic.
Are they still out there?
Yes.
Yeah, they can't get out.
They
I didn't realize it was.
I guess there's one way out if you can walk like 6 miles in the mud and then
right. That's what I read.
People can
Chris
pick
Rock
you up.
And Diplo did.
Oh, I would have started walking instantly. Instantly.
Before you got
well,
there.
Well, I would have turned around when I learned there was no music.
Which is just now.
I tailed it out of there. Well, but I think it's just like the elaborate excuses people will go through to be able to show their dicks.
Yeah. And wear like gladiator sandals.
Yeah, like
another reason I'm not there.
You just kind of go, okay, if we give it this whole conceit of returning to primality and breaking society's bounds, then you can just show your dick. And it's like, it's a fancy way to just show your dick, it seems like.
And then how long before the documentary comes out?
Oh, I can't wait. I already can't wait. It's going to be a fire festival. Like,
well,
I've said before, gobbled up both of those.
Fire festival only seemed bad to people who don't have kids. Everyone with hilarious. Kids was like, wait, so they went there were no kids, and then there were sandwiches? That's fine.
That you didn't have to make.
I will go for that. And fine, there's no music. Like, as we've just shown, music isn't even a key component of these festivals at all.
I love that the sandwiches detail has survived the test of time. Like, I remember, that's the only thing I remember too, is like they were abandoned and somebody handed out sandwiches after being promised like a Wolfgang Puck style.
I almost want to head out to Burning Man now. Now I'm interested what happened. Anywhere people can't shit is to me. That's a documentary, right? Yeah. Like, right. That's basically the only element is you go, and then there was nowhere to shit. So suddenly this is a movie.
Right. It's a breakdown of civilization right there.
That would be a disaster. But I'm kind of happy, you know, about this whole situation, because I've always hated the idea of Burning Man, even clearly not really even, knowing what it was. I've hated
it. Was, but.
And now, so these people are struggling, which makes me happy. And also, it seems like there's no sympathy for them. Like, everybody hates them now. Like, the right wing clearly hates them.
Of course.
The left wing hates them. Like, everybody is making fun of the fact that they're just literally stuck in the mud, you know, staring at Diplo, who can't play music.
Right. Although Diplo got out, so.
Diplo got out with Chris Rock.
Right. There's no reason to ever go to the desert. I'm sorry, JC. I know you enjoy it and own a home there. But whenever someone's like, oh, do you want to go to the desert? And it's like, everything in the desert dies.
Yeah.
Why would I want to be where everything dies?
Yes. Also, it's a detail that I've learned is that the whole festival happens in an old lake bed. And so now they're all surprised that it's like, oh, this lake bed is filling with water. How could we have ever predicted that would happen?
Wow.
It's just such a, as you say, Goldie, such a misfire. The whole thing is just a botched punt.
Yeah.
First play of the game, absolute flub.
But so, I do understand kind it. Of, I do wonder if it's generational that people can be entertained by nothing and just motion, because I had this thing happen last night where, so we tried to have a movie night at my house.
What movie?
So, Three Amigos.
Oh,
great.
All right.
So growing up, like, we didn't have movie night. Like, the idea that my parents would be like, let's all do something as a family and it'll be fun was like that.
Right.
That just didn't happen. There was like yard work and, you know, like,
chores.
Get over here. We're chopping this cod of wood
together.
That type of stuff. And as I've outlined, like, I only saw maybe five movies until I was 13 years old. We never went. But so I'm thinking, like, this is a great thing for my family. And my wife has made four nice bowls of popcorn because no one can eat the same thing in the house, right? Like, so one person needs, like, soy sauce on the popcorn. I like Parmesan cheese. And then someone wants soy sauce and Parmesan cheese. And it's like, you're off the map. So, like, we start the movie and it's like, all you have to do is watch this movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's all that's required of anyone. And my kids just can't watch a fucking movie. Like, they can't do it. They're kind of like fighting and then asking for the Nintendo. And then it's like, there's a problem with the popcorn. To the point where 30 minutes in, I hit pause and I just have this enormous freak out. And I'm like, can you just watch a movie? Can you point your head at the screen and have your eyes looking at the screen? And that's all we're doing. This is fun. Like, this would have been the best day of my childhood. And I'm yelling at them, not for like, you know, you got to pick up the house or what's going on with
watch
you.
A
and
movie.
It's just literally like, I'm yelling them to get them to do the fun thing. And I'm wondering if, like, everyone now just like needs to be in the desert with constant chaos and lights and drugs and their dick out because just doing one fun thing is now torture.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you nailed it by saying 30 minutes in because, and Levy's this way too, where they're so accustomed to, you know, watching these short videos on YouTube. And my Levy loves this guy, Preston, and he has a channel where they prank each other in a house and they're hiding places and they have to find each other for $20. You know, it's all these little short challenges. And I think a movie length thing is just like, even, you know, as Arthur of New York would say, it's on too long and they just cannot keep watching it. It's amazing. You're right. The my childhood, and I'm sure yours, Goldie, and maybe yours, JC, like if you got to sit down and watch a movie, it was exciting. Like,
yes,
I was in.
Well, it was, I mean, it's shifted from when I was a kid, it was like, if you were watching TV, it was like, that's going to rot your brain. Can you read a book or go outside? And now it's like, can you just watch a movie or anything with a narrative structure that's a half hour long with a story that you have to track and characters? Like, I'm not even trying to get them to go outside. I'm just trying to get them. It's like, how about a video game with a narrative?
Yeah. And it's not like they're watching, you know, Terms of Endearment. It's like you're watching a silly.
No, which I hated.
You didn't see it. You watched until somebody was named Flap, and then you turned it off. I know. I know. It's a great movie.
I stand by that decision.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
How many Flaps do you know?
Well, I know one from that movie. There are people with weird names all over the place. Goldie.
Terms of Flap. How do you like it?
Oh my God. Yeah, no. Well, it's
like one of those dumb Twitter challenges. Ruin a movie by naming a character Flap. Frankly, Flap, I don't give a damn.
I know. When we were growing up, the TV is rotting your brain thing was a real thing. But people forget, and because people, we weren't live, but books were considered like TV at one point. People forget that. You know, people are always like, oh, just read a book. It used
to be. Well, we were raised by people who heard the song Yakety Yak and really took it to heart.
Right. It wasn't from Stand By Me.
Cleaning up that floor. I loved Yakety Yak. Stand By Me soundtrack. One of the great ones. One of the great ones.
Anyway, right. I want to go to Burning Man and blast Yakety Yak as a giant lesson to everyone.
Let's do a set list.
Just finish cleaning up your tent. And you won't have to pay the rent.
Yes, I love it already. We should do a set list of Yakety Yak into Yakety Sax and then make that the new Burning Man next year in the mud. Sit face down, or lie face down in the mud and listen to Yakety Yak and Yakety Sax.
We should drive up to where the road clears. And so when the people finally come out, we just start booing them.
And blasting Yakety Yak.
That's right.
Go back.
Yes. These are like our version of the Vietnam vets returning home. We're going to spit on them and boo them.
You weren't missed.
Boo.
Boo.
Oh, and by the way, 70,000 died in Vietnam. All right. That's an apt comparison.
All right. Well, if people start dying, we take it all back.
Yeah, right. But you know what? Slightly.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right. Well, now it's time for us to yakety yak. And we're excited because Kirker Butler has the guts to join us for Johnny Jokes.
Whoa, from Hollywood, where it's not money, here's Johnny's.
Oh, boy. All right, I will start us off with the Johnny's, and then that will take your fear away, because you will see that everything goes, as they say. Okay, well, boy, here's a climate story. Record-breaking heat has actually caused corn in the United States to start sweating. Ugh. The development has Democrats calling for more policies to combat climate change, while Republicans are claiming that the corn is only sweating because it's a little husky.
Well.
A little husky on the corn. Kirkcursey, you're going to be fine. Here's another new study. A new study reveals that pot smokers have higher levels of heavy metal in their blood. Doctors are searching for solutions, but admit right now there's nothing they can do to do to do 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 do.
You're one of them.
I love it.
All right, third joke. The governor of Massachusetts has issued a statewide warning concerning the behavior of aggressive wasps. Things have gotten particularly bad in some coastal communities, with wasps forcing a gin and tonic in your hand and insisting you join them for a sail. All right. Now we're going to close with a little run of
say wasps in the punchline.
Wasps.
It's a hard one.
Wasps. Did I not say it right?
You kind of stumbled on wasps.
You know, I have too much heavy metal in my blood, apparently.
Well,
all right, let's end with a little run of that rat weasel Gutfeld. Gutfeld. Oh, the funniest man to idiots, Gutfeld. Here we go. Well, we talked about it up top, but severe flooding has trapped 70,000 fans at Burning Man. Government officials are cautioning attendees to conserve food, water, and pronouns. Oh. Vocal Glenn. And we tag onto it with no water. It's being reported that she/hers are starting to smell like she/it. Here's a terrible closer for it. A confused President Biden vowed to help the dirty mob and immediately sent Hoobastank to the Ukraine. All right. Kirker Butler, see how bad it is? Take it away.
That's great.
So I ended up just doing norms.
Oh, great. Love it. Good.
I tried Johnny. I tried to do a Karnak thing. None of it worked. So this this is not going to work either. And I'm very good at impressions. So this is going to be.
It's your strong suit.
So recently, it was reported that actor and underwear model Mark Wahlberg was working in a Florida taco stand to help raise money for the victims of the Maui wildfires. That's right. It was so successful that later that night to celebrate, Wahlberg went to a sushi restaurant and savagely beat an Asian man.
He knows his history.
He did that, you know, when he was younger. He savagely beat an Asian man, but he doesn't do that anymore.
All right.
He stopped doing that. He's a good guy now. Goes to church, you know, Catholic church. He's a big Catholic guy. In fact, it's estimated that over the years, he's donated more than $10 million to the Catholic Church. $10 million. And you can read all about it in his new book, Marky Mark and the Molester Bunch. That's a real book. Speaking of the Catholic Church, the Archdiocese up there in San Francisco had to declare bankruptcy last month as a result of all the sexual assault lawsuits. Yeah, that's right. And when reached for comment, the Archbishop in San Francisco said, hey, did you hear Mark Wahlberg savagely beat an Asian man?
Very Norm.
Well done.
Awesome. Oh, all right.
That was great.
Sweet. You all did right, it.
There we go.
We love Norms.
Want more, everyone?
Yes.
Well, it's official. It's September, and the ongoing writer and actor strikes have totally upended the TV network's fall schedule. However, still keeping his fall schedule, President Biden. Okay. Jimmy Buffett passed away early Sunday.
He gone!
Although critics say he didn't so much die as much as he appropriated death from dead people. For some reason, hearing Kirker's Norm really threw me off into like, now I'm not doing the Johnny right.
No, you got it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Florida. Florida is dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Idalia. Relief efforts are underway. And this morning, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis promised to deploy the National Guard to shoot any Mexicans. And all right, I'll end up, I got a couple norms to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this week, California experienced a once-in-a-generation blue moon. It was Dianne Feinstein's ninth. And finally, after extreme flash flooding, over 70,000 people remain trapped at Burning Man. But don't worry, this morning government planes dropped 20 tons of mescaline and cum rags.
Oh, end on a cum rag. It can't be wrong. Can't be wrong. Kirker, those were awesome. Thank yes. you. And let me now give you the proper intro.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So you heard him in Johnny's because he's got guts and he's a real writer.
Yeah.
But Kirker Butler is here with us today. And this man came to Family Guy at the same time as me in 2004. He is a hilarious joke writer. And we'll get into that in the interview. He's somebody who comes up with the funniest line when the funniest line is required, which is always garners the respect of other comedy writers. He's behind Mitch McConnell, probably Kentucky's most famous citizen, and he's certainly Kentucky's most famous living citizen under those parameters. He's an author. He wrote a book called Pretty Ugly. He, in addition to Family Guy, he worked on The Cleveland Show, Only Murders in the Building. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, please welcome Mr. Kirker Butler to the Woo-hoo! Podcast. Kirker, yay. Thanks for being
Hello.
With us.
Welcome.
Hello.
Well, thanks for having me.
You are in your library.
Yeah.
I'm in my office.
Looks like a comedy bunker.
Yeah. Well, the showrunner for Only Murders called it the dumbass Smithsonian. Because there's just so much garbage. Like I can just reach off camera and pull out some of the most obscure, weird shit.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
I love that. But you know, while we're on the topic of libraries here right up top, Kirker,
yes.
you have some fantastic breaking news for this podcast. So I want you to just lay, if you can, take us through this story I want you to tell, because I think okay. JC also were prepared yeah. with some visual aids here.
There's some photos, yeah. So in my neighborhood, I live in Silver Lake. In my neighborhood, there's a bunch of like little free libraries everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one on my street where I walk my dog. And you know how most of the little free libraries, they look like chalets or cottages or yes. schoolhouses. This looks like a temporary hurricane shelter. It's just jankiest thing you've ever seen.
Okay.
But it's one of those weird things that like it's empty for 2 weeks and then you'll go by and then it'll be like an entire set of World Book encyclopedias.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The next day they'll all be gone except for like the letter J will still be there. all of the Academy screeners from 2011. One time I went by there and there was literally a handful of spoons. It's just whatever people want to get rid of, they put in this thing. And it's all gone. So I'm walking my dog and I go past this thing and I look over and I do in fact see Goldie's book there it is right there.
Right?
And so, Jesus Christ.
And the funniest thing about this is that I listen when I walk my dog, I listen to this podcast. And so I know all of this, the Viner story is so great. And so I'm like, is someone fucking with me? Like, is someone's got to be. And so I go to it and I open it up hoping that it was like two Viner, like you did another one.
Yeah.
But there was a signature in it. And stay bald. And so I'm like, I'm going to take this home with me. I have a copy, had a copy. I bought it as soon as it came out. I think someone stole it, honestly. I don't know what happened to it, but I brought it home because I wanted a signed copy. And we're having some construction done on the house. So I just opened the door of my office and just tossed it in the door. And the next day we got there's pounding on our front door. And because of the construction, a pipe had burst in my office and there was water everywhere. And the only thing that got destroyed was your book. You think there's a picture of it? Yeah. Yeah.
Put it back in the free library. With some spoons.
Oh my God.
Unreal.
It was really one of those just miraculous.
When Kirk. Just in case you were wondering, before you started that story, I wasn't feeling great about myself.
Oh, no. God.
So it's not like you're knocking down someone who was on top of the world and thinking that their shit didn't stink and their book was amazing and everyone loved it. And it's like, oh, here's a little fake humility for that celebrity. It's like, here's something I already know.
Look, I have a book that if I walked by a free library and my book was in there, I would be so happy that somewhere out in the world there is a copy.
You literally can't give it away.
Yeah. I love, but when Kirker sent me texts and photos of this situation, I just was dying laughing. He was booked that day. Should have been booked sooner, but like I could not wait for this exact moment. I mean, and we should maybe on our posts for this week, we can maybe post some of those photos because that wet noodle book at the end might be the best. It somehow turned it into a paperback, the water.
Yeah, like the book looks like it just got back from Burning Man.
Yeah. Well, Kirker, oh my God. First of all, thank you for that amazing reporting out there in the field. That is
and
so
if awesome. Anyone else out there walks by a free library and sees my stupid fucking book being given away, please send us the picture and come on the podcast and tell your story about how no one wants my book.
Oh, God. It is so welcome here.
It really is. You know, like, what a fucking miscalculation to write a book about baldness where you just go like, it's like you decided, okay, you know, I'm going to write a book called So You're Impotent and people are going to bring it to the cash register and buy it. It's like, God, what a blocked
calculation. Well, also, it's like you lay bare the thing that you are, I wouldn't even say insecure about, but the thing that you're, you know, it's hardest for you to kind of talk about. And then it ends up in a free library somewhere and then a wet noodle in Kirker's hand.
Yeah, it's like if Eminem flipped the script and then people just kept doing insulting stuff about him with the same insults and then everyone was cheering even louder and knowing that he was bummed out by it.
Oh, right. God.
And it might be more of an insult too, Goldie, because I have so much hair.
It's true. I don't know how you're cheating, but you know, there'll be a Lance Armstrong style reckoning for you.
There's a doctor in Beverly Hills that I have bought a second house for.
Well, he's earned it because you got a flowing mane. You got a Bee Gees-esque mane going on there.
Going for Gary Gibb. For a while, people would say, you look just like Eric Clapton. And now you look like Jerry Garcia.
God, aging's no fun. Like
and it ends with you look a lot like Kathleen Turner.
By the way, you do look like Eric Clapton. I've always thought this about you. You have many Clapton phases, and of course, you and now let's get into this because, as I said in the intro, you grew up in Kentucky, and that must have been its own thing. And so clearly, right away, you were trying to get out of there. And one of the, go ahead, respond to that.
Yeah, no, please. Yeah.
And but one of the ways, or the way that you did that, was you threw yourself into theater at a young age. And this is the hysterical era of Kirker for me, because you were kind enough to lay yourself bare when you came to Family Guy, and you brought your hilarious headshots took in that era. And, you know, to try and get a little traction as this sort of like jack of all trades actor. And one of the shots in the headshot is of you literally hanging off the side of a building.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Can you tell us
a little bit about that photo shoot and the thought process behind making all
of
those?
I assume, by the way, this cost like $500 at least.
I was in debt for months. And it was this photographer in Chicago. I got a theater degree from Western Kentucky University.
Yeah,
that's worth a lot out here.
Right? And so I was afraid of New York, and I didn't want to go to Los Angeles. I went to Chicago. I wanted to do Second City. And so I thought, I've got to get like professional headshots.
Yep.
And so when you're just starting out, like any advice that anybody will give you who has had any kind of success, you're like, yeah, sure, great. So I met with an agent, and they're like, you know what? You should do like a comp, not just a headshot, but like get a bunch of different pictures of you in different looks and whatever. And I'm like, well, I've got one look. But they're like, well, just, you know, do it. So I found this photographer. And we had, you know, we got like a model, a woman to come in, and we like pretended we were going through a photo album. And there was like an old crate, and I'm sitting on a crate in like a denim jacket, trying to look like a badass. And I'm 22 and weigh 130 pounds, like just not effective at all. But then there was one where I was in a suit and was holding a newspaper and like, I think maybe a briefcase or just in something. I don't know.
Right.
But we're in Chicago and it's January, and this photographer's like, let's go up. There's a water tower on the roof. Let's just go up in the roof and we'll take a picture up there. I'm like, okay. So I climb up on this water tower and I'm hanging 6 or 7 stories over the edge, and I'm holding on and it's fucking freezing. And I've got the newspaper like, look at me. This is what business people do. They hang off water towers. And so then I get the photos back and it's cropped in such a way that it just looks like I could have done it anywhere. Like it looked like a backdrop. Like, it doesn't look real. It looked stupid. But of course I'm like, oh, look. And then I had to explain to people, like, I'm really hanging off a thing here.
We have a role. It's a waiter who says, what are you fellas thinking? Maybe we'll use the guy hanging off a water tower.
I love that guy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, was that the composite headshot that you used for a while?
Oh, yeah, sure. I said it because there was on one side was like just the regular headshot. And then on the back was the, I think I've got one somewhere. I can really show you.
Please. Right. Yeah. I see some glossies. I love
rad.
That is just so great.
That is
Look
so great.
Look at Kirker, it's a great picture because you have a great smile. It doesn't really, it doesn't look like you, but it is you because the same smile is there.
I'm not sure what you would cast that guy for. It's not a bad photo. It's
nothing,
a good
Goldie.
Photo, but it's not. It's very nondescript. It's like, it's like a guy who gets murdered that no one remembers on Law and Order, and they need details about him, and no one knows anything, even though he's lived in that building for 8 years.
And you know what? I had booked that gig of the guy who was murdered and had no lines, just laid there in a pool of blood, I would have been so fucking happy.
That's a victory.
Yes,
that's a victory. But it looks like a guy who's eating pie at a diner.
Nothing. There's nothing interesting about this man.
I disagree.
He's a little fascinating in his lack of characteristics.
He could be a serial murderer.
Yeah,
could be.
He's just like white guy. Just white guy.
White guy.
It's like friendly.
But that
white
was
guy.
Back when you that know was what? Okay.
Toothpaste commercial. You've got those really nice uppers. Yeah.
Curly whites.
Okay. Going to the comp.
There he is.
Yes.
Hanging off the building.
And you can tell in the background, it just looks like nothing.
You're right.
Like a background that you would see on a sec.
Wait, did I see Balloon Twister on there?
Wait, yeah. Really? That's like as a like
one also of the skill. No working actor headshot or non-working actor headshot has the performer wearing a suit that costs more than $80. The suits look so cheap.
I can't even tell. This was definitely like some thrift kind store. Of, yeah, some thrift store. You talked about Balloon Twister. So, okay.
Oh, yes.
Wait.
Oh, yes.
There's a picture incredible. Of twisting balloon animals.
Are there, is that a bicycle?
A bicycle? It's a motorcycle.
Oh, of course it is. Sorry. That baby can go fast.
And
a bowl of fruit.
And then I also did adult parties.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I love that's a
There's
good
a
dick.
Dude with a hard on, but it's a balloon. And he looks angry.
He twisted a balloon dick.
Who wants a balloon rapist?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that's great. And so did you balloon twist at parties?
I did balloon twisted parties.
Oh, that's so
cool.
Is that how you're getting through the strike? Or
what's that?
Is that how you're getting through the strike?
Yes. Yeah. I'm at City Walk every day. I got one gig where they flew me to Orlando and I twisted balloons at an Exxon corporate thing. It was the weirdest thing. So Goldie, so you can see it here. I put all my statistics here.
Yeah.
My height and my weight, my waist inseam, because all that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love him, but can we find pants for him?
Great teeth.
Look, it says great teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in Kentucky, that's notable.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love it. It said, what did it say? Accents on there or dialects?
Dialects.
Yeah. So was that like, I can do a Kentucky accent?
Well, in college, you know, I took a dialects class. And so I suddenly felt like I was, you know, some great impressionist or something.
It's a New York slice of pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever audition for specific dialects?
I don't think I did. My auditioning was so I went to college. I got a performing arts degree, which is acting and singing and dancing.
Yes.
Cool.
And I was a triple threat in that I could do none of those things. I think I'm young and stupid. And, you know, in college, I was decent in college. You know, it was.
Yeah.
Small state school in Kentucky and got, you know, on stage a lot. And so then I go to Chicago and I go to a dance audition, which was a mistake.
Yeah.
And I go in and there's all these people there and they teach the choreography like one time. They go like boom, 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 here, twist and die. And I'm like, So I just start slowly packing my bag up.
You didn't go through with it?
Are you wearing a dance belt?
Yeah, tight in a dance belt. And jazz shoes, and it's 70 below outside, literally 70 below. I was at Neiman Marcus. I'd walked to this place, froze to death, and I'm slowly packing my bag, and because my name is Butler, I'm in the first round, and I'm hearing my name, Butler, as I'm like hiding behind the other dancers, and I ran out of the room. Never went to another dance audition.
I have a story to tag on to that, if I may. So I used to be what was called a plus size model in New York City, and one of the big auditions
109 pounds.
Right, exactly. the frequent commercial audition was for Slim Fast. And so we all knew each other. We'd go to these auditions, and they would every audition, every round, it would be a different set of auditioning. So this one time they had the same thing where you walked in and they were teaching you a dance routine. None of us were trained dancers.
Yeah.
So they'd be like 5, 6, 7, 8, and then just do these moves. And then you'd go into the next room. And then they'd play sexy back, you know, Justin. And you'd go in, and then someone's in there counting 5, 6, 7, 8. And it's just you. And I'm doing like this ridiculous, I'm making it up. And then they go, okay. You know, they stop the music. And then what they do for every Slim Fast audition, they make you stop, lift your shirt, zoom in on your stomach, and then make you turn around, zoom in on your back. Yeah. And then stop and go, okay, let's play the music again. Zoomed in on your belly.
Stomach. Oh, what a nightmare.
Every like audition, it turned into that. Was like, okay, one time you'd have like hula hoops and soccer balls and you'd see if you can juggle this. And then they do, okay, great, thanks. Now let's do this. And you zoom in. And then
I thought you were going to say that for the Slim Fast audition, you had to give Tommy Lasorda a Blumpkin. What's it called?
Oh, like what?
Blumpy.
Blumpy, yeah.
Like a Zerbert?
No. Worse than a Zerbert, JC. Tommy Lasorda.
It's a blowjob on a toilet, JC.
You said Blumpkin. I'm like, do you know what you're saying?
Yeah. A blowjob on a toilet, because Tommy Lasorda was famous for like inventing that, or at least bringing it to light.
I did not know that.
And he also did Slim Fast, right?
Tommy Lasorda, great guy. Wonderful.
A sensible shake for breakfast and then a sensible dinner. That is hilarious. And so,
and then blow me while I'm shitting out my Slim Fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful man.
Yeah, we actually have another writer on Family Guy who almost gave Tommy Lasorda a blowjob. You remember Mike D, our friend Mike D, had to buckle Tommy Lasorda's pants at a urinal.
Oh my God, had to.
Oh, God bless him. That's good. That's good. So, Kirker, running out of the dance audition, did you actually book work when you were trying to book work? Did you book anything that you can remember?
I mean, aside from my balloon twisting at the Exxon thing, I did. No, I don't think that I ever really did. I did some theater stuff.
That's something.
Some plays and some musicals and things like that. But I didn't do any.
Did you get in a Second City?
So I did the training center at Second City, and that's when I decided I was going to be a writer. I did the training center, and then I got a job there in the, you know, seating people at night. It was a host job, and they would come in and I would seat them, and then I would bring them, you know, shitty pizza and whatever. And when I was there, it was Carell and Colbert, Adam McKay.
Oh.
John Glazer, like
big wigs.
Tina and Amy were coming up on the main stage and the ETC stage. And I'm like, fuck, So I went to my teacher and I said, if that's what this is supposed to be, I can't do it. And he said, well, you're funny. Can you write? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, write something. And so I started writing.
Oh, well, then that was good advice.
It was.
But you're being a little modest here, because something I just read about you this morning, well, I was not getting a Blumpkin, but I was in the
Blumpkin
area. I was doing half. But I read that you were in 2020 inducted into the, like, what is it? The Michigan Barnyard Theater Hall of Fame? Wall of Fame?
The Barn Theater Hall of Fame. That's right. Yeah, because I did summer stock theater there for 2 summers.
Oh, you made an impression. 2 seasons, Hall of Fame? That's amazing.
2 seasons. Well, yes. And it's there's a giant, it's really nice, actually. It's a big granite stone, but it does look a bit like a tombstone, like a gravestone. And so I joke that it's, you know, it's where my acting career died. Tombstone up. But you know, there's good names on there. There's Jennifer Garner's on there, and Lauren Graham, and Tom Wopat.
Don't make me Google.
That's awesome.
You did a show with Jennifer Garner, right?
I did. We did a couple shows together back in the early 90s in theater. Yeah.
And did she have it?
She did indeed have it. You just could tell that she was special. And everybody knew she was special. She was great.
It means that she was a competent actress who was hot.
And could dance.
Okay.
And martial arts. Wasn't she also?
Martial arts.
Yeah, martial arts.
And genuinely a very nice person.
Aww. Yes, I've heard this about her. Well, to put up with Ben Affleck for so long, she'd have to be.
I know.
All right, so you're given this great piece of advice, which is try writing something, and you do.
Yep.
So how long between then and your move out to Los Angeles?
7 years. There was a period where when I realized I wasn't going to be an actor, and I thought, well, I still want to do something. I don't know. And while I'm trying to figure out what writing is, my stepfather had a connection to someone at Disney in Orlando. And I thought, oh, I'll just go work for Disney for a while. He could get me a job.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what department it was. So I pack up all my shit in Chicago. I go all the way to Orlando, and that guy ghosts me. He doesn't return a phone call. No. He does nothing. Oof. So I had, there was a guy who was a teacher at Western, and a guy named Steve Probus, saved my life. He hired me to start doing art department PA stuff. So I started doing art department work, and then I started doing set decoration. And I was the set decorator for NSYNC's first video when they were just kids.
Wow. Yeah. So this is in Orlando.
It's in Orlando. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's weird too, because they were kids. They were, you know, 15. And then one of them was like at the end of it, they were like, "Hey, we got an extra ticket to see Oasis. Do you want to go with us?" And I'm like, I can't go to a concert with a bunch of children.
Nice,
I'd be like, "Oh shit, I saw Oasis with NSYNC," but I can't.
You were invited though.
I was invited.
What a weird jumble of a situation that would be, seeing Oasis with NSYNC. It seems like totally mismatched.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So that flamed out. I went back to Chicago, and that's when things got really dicey. I gained a lot of weight. I fell into like a really deep depression. I had a nervous breakdown. Oh. Just a complete emotional like holocaust for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, fuck, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I just got in my car and I drove to Niagara Falls, and I just sat there and looked at Niagara Falls. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do with my life? And then I realized I just had to move back home into my mother's basement.
Thanks, Niagara Falls. Thanks for the inspiration.
I mean, that's what I did.
Give you answers.
And now that you've made it, look at you in another basement.
Another basement.
Right. Your own basement.
This is my basement.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, baby.
So were you literally suicidal? Or
don't think I was suicidal. I wanted to see something that was much larger than myself. I wanted to see something that was impressive. Yeah. Because everything about my life was not. And so
How old were you at that point?
I was probably 26.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess 25, 26.
Yeah.
So I moved back to Kentucky. And but now this whole time I've been writing. I was writing pretty much every day. Oh. I was writing short stories and plays and just writing.
The Man with the Great Teeth, a story by Kirker Butler. Not everything was as good as the dentist said. He mused, refilling his glass of Muscatel.
Oh, I
love this.
I was drinking so much. Not Muscatel, but just anything to get my hands on. So I was back in Kentucky and miserable and fat, and I kept writing. And then I decided, well, maybe I'll get a master's degree. And so I took a writing class at University of Louisville. Hmm. And I met my wife.
There you go.
She's a poet, and she's a very good poet, Karen Harriman, Katie Harriman. She had her new book.
Nice.
She was great, and we moved in together and then decided that we're going to move to Los Angeles right after we get married. So in the meantime, I wrote and directed this short film called The Confetti Brothers. And I thought, if you're going to do a movie about confetti, it's about these two guys who own and operate their family's 75-year-old confetti business.
Yeah.
And so I thought, if you're going to do a movie about confetti, you've got to have Rip Taylor. Oh. So I tracked down Rip Taylor. This was pre-internet. Hard to find, easy to hire, Rip Taylor. He was in Vegas doing a show at the Flamingo.
Can I just ask, the tagline of the movie, "The Confetti Brothers, they're getting a shred of the competition"?
No, that's really good.
And quick. Oh my God.
I'm really sorry. Good. So back to Rip
Taylor. I think it was more of like a Citizen Kane, like, "It's terrific." Like that. So a friend of mine said, "Hey, I'm going to fly to LA, drive to Vegas, shoot Rip Taylor, and come back." And a friend of mine said, "Hey, I've got a friend in LA who's a writer. You should have lunch with him. His name's Will." And I'm like, "Great, I'll have lunch with your friend Will." So we meet at Dalt's, no longer Dalt's, RIP Dalt's in Burbank. And I knew nothing about this guy, really, just as a friend of a friend who was a writer. And I said, "So what do you write?" And he said, "Well, right now I'm running Friends." Ah. Like, fuck. You're like here. And he said, "Yeah, do you have anything that I can read?" And so I'd been writing for 7 years.
Yeah.
I had, and this was before thumb drives or anything.
Oh.
And so I had everything printed out. I had everything with me in a backpack. And so I pulled out a stack like this.
Yes, I do.
I had short stories. I had screenplays. I had a Raymond spec. I had a 70s show spec.
Nice.
And I said, what do you want? And he said, give me the Raymond spec.
Yeah.
So I did. And shot Rip Taylor, a whole other story. Spent the day with him, helped him pick out a handbag. And about 2 weeks later, Will calls me and he's like, hey, this is great. I have no notes. What are your plans?
Wow.
And I'm like,
wow.
Oh, shit. Okay. I said, well, I'm going to get married in a couple of weeks and then we're going to move to LA. And he said, all right, we'll stay in touch. So we stayed in touch and I moved to LA and I got a job at E. And then about 18 months after I got to LA, he called me and said, hey, I've got this show on the WB with Amanda Bynes and Jenny Garth. Do you want to work on it? And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. So that was my first gig.
What were you doing at E?
I was a news producer. I was writing the, wow. For E! News Daily, today, Julia Roberts.
When you worked at E, did you work in that building across from Family Guy?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So you spent a lot of time in that weird sort of monolithic modern complex that's getting torn down in a couple of years.
What I Like About You, is that the show?
It was What I Like About You, that's right.
Oh my God.
Nice. Well, what a story. I mean, thank God for... So what's Will's last name?
Will Calhoun.
Okay, yes, I recognize that name for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And did he come from Seinfeld and go to Friends?
No, he did another sitcom. It was not Seinfeld.
Okay.
I forget what it was, but he started at Friends when he was like, I think, executive story editor level or maybe co-producer. He kind of worked his way up to running it.
Well, God, he really reached a hand out and helped you. I mean, that's
awesome. It was a lifesaver, truly. Like he really just took an interest in me and what I had written. And he was from Louisiana. So, we had a Southern thing and we had against some mutual friends, which I think helped.
No notes. He's like, I have no notes. Well, what are
that's
you doing?
Great. That's, I know, that's I didn't, incredibly rare.
Yeah, it was incredibly rare.
Was it hard to go from 7 years of writing in your mom's basement and shooting Rip Taylor to then being in a room? Or were you prepared just based on like your desperation and how serious you had taken it?
So my first time in a room, it was after the first run through for What I Like About You. And you invite all your friends and everything to come over. And this was before the pilot was going to be shot, the week the pilot was shot. So I go into this room and Will had invited all of his friends, which meant everyone in the room were Friends writers. Like all of these names, Adam Chase, Greg Malent, all these names that I had seen on television. I'm now sitting at a table with them.
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
Never been in a writer's room before. And I'm shitting myself. Right. And so nervous. I mean, just nervous. Oh, the whole day I was nervous. So Will is off getting notes and he comes back in and Greg Malin says, all right, boss, what's the first thing we're going to do? And I'm sitting back like this, just trying to play it cool.
Yeah.
And Will says, well, the first thing we're going to do is Kirker is going to take that extra large sticker off his new sweater and just all the way down with one of the strips that say extra large.
Oh, no.
And I'd had that on hours.
Like leaning back.
That's great. I love Will Calhoun. I've never met him. I love this guy. That's so great. All right. So that's your first nerve-wracking experience. Now tell us, because I can't quite remember, like, how did you get pulled into the Family Guy universe?
So I'd done 2 years on What I Like About You.
Yeah.
And there was a regime change, a new showrunner. And it was time for me to go. So Family Guy had just been picked up again.
Yes.
And my agent at the time, actually his assistant, said, you should write a Family Guy spec. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I did. I wrote a Family Guy spec. And then there was one joke in there that my agent at the time was like, you got to cut this joke. It's too much. And I'm like, it's a great joke. And he was like, no, you got to cut this joke.
Do you remember the joke?
Yeah, it was so Peter and Quagmire were looking out the window. Meg was sunbathing and Quagmire says, all right, Peter, well, I'm going to go home and pound out some knuckle children. I'll see you later. And my agent was like, that's so gross. You have to cut it. You're going to offend people. And I said, well, look, if you don't like Family Guy, you're going to hate this whole script. Yeah. And if you do like it, you're going to like that joke. And he was like,
oh, it was a he.
It was a he.
I'm surprised. Okay.
And so now somehow, I think he was also Ricky Blitz agent at the time. Right. So he got the script to Seth. Right. And I know that no one ever reads a spec of their own show. Sure. But Seth told me, he said, I didn't know anyone was writing Family Guy specs. So I was curious. Oh. And so he read it and called me in for an interview. And I'm sitting there, I'm waiting, you know, Seth, I'm nervous. You guys had already, I think you're like a week into the new thing. And
checked your sweater for stickers.
Right. Yes. Oh my God. Believe me, I did. And I think the only people that had not been hired yet were like me and Cherry at that point.
Right.
So I'm waiting. Seth comes out, puts out his hand and says, hey, Seth MacFarlane, pound out some Knuckle Children. It's one of the funniest jokes I have read.
Yes!
Oh, that's great. I knew that's that. Right. I knew it was building to that. And yeah. that's such a great lesson for writers listening.
Well, let me yeah, give the ahead. Lesson. The lesson is if you can think of a good euphemism for jacking off yes. that no one's heard, you can have a career. But Alec, please go ahead. What is
no, the no, that's exactly the lesson crystallized. Yes. So always keep in your gross, dirty stuff because people love reading it.
Now, okay. The day that I got the offer for Family Guy, I also got an offer to work on Mike Scully's show, Savages, that he created
yes.
with Mel.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So Family Guy at the time had an order for 35 episodes.
Yeah.
And Savages, I think, was like, you know, just it was a pilot. And I think they ordered 9 or something and or 12, whatever it was yeah. at the time. So my agent was like, look, this is you got 2 offers here. You really got to go for the Mike Scully, Mel Gibson show. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Your agent says
this person's recommended nothing but horrible decisions.
He's not my agent anymore. But a good guy, good agent, good guy. Just, you know, not a great fit. But right. He said, you know, he said Mike Scully with The Simpsons and he's got this reputation and he's going to work forever and he'll always have shows. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I've met Mike and Julie and they're great and they know me and I know them. And I think I'm going to take the 35.
Yeah.
Episodes of a show that will probably run for 20 years.
Yeah. Right. You knew that. You had a feeling it would run. For-
yeah, because it was just, it was just going to work. I just knew it was going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was like, all right, well, you know, it's your career.
Again follow your instincts.
Yeah.
And I want to shout out, and this should be no surprise given the Knuckle Children joke that you just quoted, but you have had this knack over the years at Family Guy of when a hilarious line was needed, you have come up with it. And I want to just, because we don't usually do this, go so granular into like a writer's career, but there are a couple of things that you have pitched over the years, many, but two stand out to me. So one of them was, there was a scene where it was in the clam and for some reason, Lois was there and like kind of hanging out with the gang. And do you remember which joke I'm talking about with her? She had a jacket. Yes.
Yeah.
So do describe this because I don't remember the exact the context of it, but I remember the punchline.
Yeah, it's been a while. She comes in and she has had a makeover or something and she's feeling sexy. And so she's wearing something underneath that's, I don't know, it's like a tube top maybe. I don't remember exactly, but she's going to, someone says, take your jacket off. And she's like, what? And they start shouting, jacket off, jacket off.
That was just,
I was so proud.
If we could have carried you out like Rudy that day, we would have, because that was just such a towering home run. And the other line that I always think about, and I'll just say 2 words and then you can take it over, is Jimmy Connors.
Jimmy Connors. Yeah. I was proud of that one too. It's always exciting to me when I can get something really filthy on television.
Yes, and you did.
So there was a scene where Meg was having fantasies about 1970s Jimmy Connors.
Yes.
And so he appeared to her at the end and, you know, they had this nice conversation. And then he gave her 2 tennis balls. And he said, if you ever need me, just rub my balls and I'll come.
Again, another, you would have been the only player carried off the Notre Dame field twice because that was just, and I remember, you know, Rich Appel, the other showrunner, he was the one who had to fight with standards and legal to get things in the show. And that was a fight and he won it. And so it was just overall a triumph. And Jimmy Connors actually came in to record that line, and he loved it. He loved it. It was so great. God, what an episode that was. So,
yeah, just I'll put that on my tombstone. Just rub my balls and I'll come.
So your Family Guy experience was, you know, you were one of the great writers there. We had a very, very funny room from the beginning. And this is something we've talked about on the show from time to time, where the Family Guy room definitely changed over the years, where today it's very kumbaya and we respect everybody's feelings and all that. But that was not the way it was when we first started. So do you remember any examples of like, Jesus Christ, this place is fucking dog eat dog. They'll slit your throat in a heartbeat.
The end of my first week, I came home and I cried. I
literally, oh, no.
It's true. I came home and I sat down with
my wife. Everyone's so mean. I could be working with Mel Gibson, who's nice.
That big open-hearted Christian man. Yes. I was terrified. I was really, because everyone, I was also the only person there who didn't know one other person.
Right.
Like everybody else there knew somebody from another show. And I mean, even Cherry, who was, it was her first job, she knew Chris Sheridan. And so I was the only person who was coming in, didn't know anybody. And everybody was not mean to me in particular,
right?
But just knew that, holy shit, this is a dark place.
It's very dark.
And I just kept my head down for the first couple weeks. I remember the first joke that I got into the script.
Oh, what was it?
First cutaway. It was in a room and it was Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. And he says, "What's up, Doc?" And Elmer Fudd shoots him and his chest blows up. And then he goes up and snaps his neck and drags him off. And there's, I was in a gag room, Alex Borstein, and I pitched that and it went in. And then I found out later from David Goodman that Alex went to her later and said, "That was Kirker's joke. I just want you to know."
Oh, I love her.
And so she made sure that he knew that I was contributing, and I'll be forever grateful for her.
Women supporting women. You love to see it.
It's so rare. Yeah. So it was, but you know, as Danny says, don't get off the fucking boat. And I have no idea what people have said about me. I'm sure it's horrible and I never want to know, really.
Yes, that's the best attitude. Just have blinders and you'll be fine. Yeah, so bringing up all that about Family Guy, and we have had David Goodman a few times on the podcast recently to talk about the strike, but before to talk about Family Guy and his experiences. And of course, David was running the show when we were first there. He ran it for several years. And as Goldie has pointed out in the past, like, David was like an old school boss. Like, he was a little bit intimidating and he would get, you know, upset and, you know, kind of not yell, but a little bit yell in his distinctive voice. But one of the things that over the years has taken on almost a cult like status is him telling you to get pizza. Now, how did that become such a big thing? You're always the name that gets named when he's shouting to get some pizza.
I think because it was, if I remember correctly, it was a late night. It was quiet. Like, we were giving, like, people would go out and get pizza in shifts.
Yep.
And come back so we could keep working. And I just remember it was really quiet and we're sitting there. Nobody was saying anything. And then he just burst out, "Get some pizza." So I did.
Instantly one of the five most recognizable quotes.
Wait, why did he say it? Because he, to give you energy or?
No, it was just, I guess it was just my turn.
So random.
Around and I wasn't eating pizza. I don't know.
Yep. Yep. And pizza was always like we didn't plan to stay late, but we're here. So we're just going to order something quick.
And here's some pizza that will be the worst pizza somehow you've ever had.
Yeah. Right. It's not dinner. It's pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza.
Yeah. God, LA pizza is such a travesty. All right. Well, so we just, there was so much laughter in that room. You know, you provided a lot of it and it was just such a great time, but this wasn't the only working experience we had together. So several years later, when I was on an overall deal with Fox, but I had left Family Guy to do either Dad's or the Western, something that failed. And so then they put me on a show called Life in Pieces, run by Justin Adler, very nice, funny guy. But you were also on that show. So that was, and so was Maggie Mull. So that was exciting for the three of us that it's like, oh, for, like you said, you didn't know anyone in the Family Guy room. We went in there as a block. And I think, cool. you know, we sort of did our best to sort of snark our way through that and kind of drag our feet. But that was a very fun experience too. But one thing I'll always remember about that, and I think you know where I'm going here, is when I was leaving the show. So tell this from your perspective, because this was kind of like, I still get embarrassed when I hear this story.
So I'd also been planning to leave the show after the season, but I hadn't told anyone. I'd spoken with my agents about it, and Aaron Kaplan, who's a good friend, he was the executive producer. I talked to Aaron about it, and but I hadn't told Justin or anybody. I told Alec, which was the mistake. And so we're sitting there, and it's the last day of the season. And Justin's like, everybody, you know, Alec is leaving the show. So, you know, Alec, yay, Alec. And then Alec says, well, what about Kirker? He's leaving too.
Why?
Justin looks at me and says, you are? And I'm like, oh. Alec, God damn it.
Did you know what you were doing?
No, I really, that's the only thing in my defense is that I assumed, which, you know, was a huge mistake that Kirker had, that they had all talked about this. And I felt badly in the moment because I felt like, well, why am I being singled out and honored when this other great writer is leaving too?
But what's so funny is that it goes back to, so Alec and I have the same birthday.
Yes.
Oh, and we're both Valentine's babies.
Yeah. Yes. And so whenever there is, when I was at Family Guy and it would, you know, Alex, the showrunner. So on February 14th, there'd be a cake and it's like, oh, it's Alec's birthday. Everybody from every department, come out. Alec's birthday. Come out, everyone. Celebrate Alec's birthday. And then everyone's singing happy birthday. And then sometimes Alec or someone else would say, you know, it's also Kirker's birthday. And then I'm like, oh, of course. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, Kirker too. And so Alec gets this big cake. And then I remember once, it wasn't quite this bad, but I remember once it was like, I felt like someone nudged a PA. And I was like, go get Kirker or something. So we're all having the cake. We go back in the room. And then I feel like someone just throws like a box of Little Debbie snack cakes in front of me, like a Mountain Dew. And it's like, here, fatso, it's your birthday too. And there was one year too that Karen, my wife, brought balloons into the show for Alec's birthday. Not mine. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. And I'm like, no, it's a bit. It's mine.
Well, I'm glad you got to shout out Mountain Dew, because I know that's also a big part of your are you still on the Mountain Dew train?
Not. I've been off for several years.
Oh, good for you. It was, you used to, you know, that was an identifiable part of your personality for a while.
In my 20s, I would go to 7-Eleven in the morning and get a 2-liter and just carry it around all day.
Oh my God.
Yeah. God, Mountain Dew is so delicious. I don't think people realize how good it is, because it's sort of looked at as like, ooh, it's all sugar. And I mean, all sodas are sugar, but Mountain Dew tasted great.
Yeah.
There's a soda that is from Kentucky. It's called Ale 8. And it's like a combination of ginger ale and Mountain Dew.
Oh.
Whenever I go back there, I drink that. It's really good.
Yeah, that's add a little class to it with the ginger ale. That's nice.
Nice. I like it.
All right, so we've had a lot of these. We've intertwined at a few points in our careers. But now talk to us about Only Murders in the Building, because this show became just a runaway hit for Hulu. And so what was it like being on a show like that on a streamer that, you know, streaming comedies to that point weren't getting a ton of traction, and this one really did. So what was it like being in the eye of that storm?
You know, it was great. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is, you know, when Family Guy came back and it was huge, and, you know, we went to Vegas and did all that stuff, and, you know, it wasn't quite that big because it was during COVID, and so all of the writers' rooms were on Zoom, and it was a very different experience. But you know, I did get to work with two of my idols with Steve and Marty, and I got to write jokes for them.
Crazy.
And I wrote a song with Steve.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome. Thought you were going to say two of my idols, Selena Gomez and Martin Short.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So you wrote a song with Steve Martin.
Yeah, for season two. So Steve's character in the show is an actor. And back in the 80s, he was on a cop show called Brazos, where he was like a, you know, Simon and Simon or something like that.
Yeah.
And so like all of those guys in the 80s, he released an album. And his hit was called Angel in Flip Flops.
Yes.
So I, when we were writing that, I was like, I want to write that song with Steve.
On Zoom, or how did you work with Steve Martin?
No. So he was in New York. I was here, and I had some lyrics, and I emailed them to him. And then like, I got an email. He's like, hey, can I call you later today? And we'll talk about this. I'm like,
yes.
So every now and then, I mean, it was only like two or three times, but I would get on the phone with Steve Martin, and he would play this thing on the guitar, and, you know, we'd send lyrics back and forth, and it was crazy. And so we, on the credits, we have a shared lyrics by, thing, and it's on Spotify, and I'll have that forever. It was amazing.
That's really cool. Unbelievable.
They released, I've got one somewhere, 45s.
Oh,
wow.
Of the song. So I've got a 45 of it.
That's so cool.
That's awesome. That's so amazing. And so, you know, Steve Martin, obviously, just like one of the comedy living legends. And Martin Short is someone who has probably made me laugh more in my lifetime than any other comedian. So that's awesome. But then you have this, as Goldie pointed out, this Selena Gomez component of it. And I can imagine this would be me in that situation, where going into it, I would be elbowing other people like, what the fuck, Selena Gomez, she's going to fuck it up with these two legends. Turns out Selena Gomez was the key to the show being incredibly popular.
Absolutely. And, you know, we knew that when we hired her. And, you know, there was a question in the writer's room, like, how's she going to be able to hang with these two legends? We're just, you know, curious. And immediately we knew that we could give her anything. And the way she chose to play the character was so opposite. The energy was opposite of what those guys were doing, and it just fit so perfectly. And once we saw what she was doing, it was so much easier to write for her. And it was great. She's a delight. I have nothing but good things to say about her.
Oh, that's awesome.
And were you on set, or was it just on the writer's room?
I was on set like only once, but I met her a couple times at, you know, we did some things just to hang out.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure like Selena Gomez has like 50 million followers on social media.
Least.
So
yeah,
if she promotes something, it actually matters.
Yeah. It's interesting. One of the very limited, very few conversations I've had with her, she told me that she doesn't even have Instagram on her phone. I'm like, God, that's amazing. Like, how do you have all of these followers and don't even have it on your phone?
428 million. That's so many.
That's so many.
It's insane.
Wait, 428?
Yeah.
Oh, I said 50.
Yeah.
Wow. That's way more than 50. If my calculations are correct, that is more than 50.
Imagine if she was just like Trump won.
I know.
Like,
I know.
Would that just make them take over the White House and just descend on the White House?
That's fantastic.
But it was truly one of those things where, you know, they say don't meet your heroes and don't work with your heroes. It was nothing but a good experience.
Oh, I love that.
Steve and Marty are exactly who you think they are, exactly who you want them to be. And again, going in with no expectations about Selena, just a complete delight.
Oh, that's great. I remember I was lucky enough, I got to have lunch with Martin Short because, you know, I guess his agents had made him, when we were making Dads and we were trying to, you know, get different people to play the dads, and obviously wanted him, but he was smart enough to pass on that. So we didn't end up tarnishing Martin Short's brilliant career with Dads. Although he did do Mulaney.
How did you pitch it to him?
I remember just being so excited and having way too many drinks at lunch, and then being like, the dads.
That's not going to make him want to do it.
They're like our dads. And blah, blah, blah. But it was actually the second time I had met Martin Short, where I was lucky enough in New York to be at a dinner with Sarah Silverman, Jerry Seinfeld and Martin Short and Matthew Broderick at after a play in New York that Matthew Broderick was in. And I'll never forget the show. Matthew was a little disappointed in the show that evening. Apparently they didn't even have a full house. And Matthew came in and he said, "I'm sorry, I don't know what happened. I don't know where the audience was tonight." And Martin Short, in his style, just said, "Other shows," which I always thought was so funny. And so when we were walking to the table where we were eating, I mean, I've worshipped Martin Short for so long, I just saddled up right next to Martin Short and I said, "I'm a huge fan of yours, so I hope you don't mind if I sit next to you during dinner and just tell you how funny you are." And he said, "I don't think we're going to have a problem with that." So he was just very welcoming and accepting to me. All right. So Only Murders in the Building, huge hit. And what have you been working on since then?
So I was doing a couple of things, negotiating two projects right before the strike, and the contracts didn't get done. Oh. So hopefully they'll still be there. But I have been, so I told you earlier that I thought, oh, maybe I'll go back to college and I'll get my, you know, master's and whatever. Yeah. So I'm actually doing it now.
Wow. In what?
Creative writing. I'm getting an MFA in creative writing and fiction.
The notion that they're qualified awesome. To teach you is so friggin' backwards.
I know.
You should be teaching the class. It's crazy.
I know. Well, but this is all going to end up with you being a professor at Western Kentucky, right?
That's my dream.
Yeah.
Is it?
No.
Oh, that's so gullible.
No, what I would like to do is, you know, in my retirement years, because Karen has three master's degrees, and one is in poetry, and one's in social work, and one's in teaching. And so it would be great if, when we retired, if, you know, we could just go teach at places for, you know, for a semester and travel the world and do that shit.
Yeah,
it'd be awesome.
But I've wanted a master's degree for a long time, and I was just never able to do it because of work, because it takes so much time. But then during the pandemic, I was like, well, shit, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it. So I looked online for low residency programs, and I found that NYU does a low residency program in Paris.
Wow.
Whoa.
And so twice this year already, in January and July, I was in Paris.
Nice.
I went for 10 days or 12 days, something like that. And so you go there, you do workshops, and you work with all of these incredible writers, fiction writers, poets, nonfiction writers. And there's about 60 of us in the program. And so, you know, during the day we're writing and we're talking about writing and we're reading. And then at night we go out and we, you know, drink and eat French food.
Sounds amazing.
It's incredible.
Great.
And so I'm going back again in January, and then July of next year, and then the following January I'll graduate, and then I'll have the same master's degree, the same MFA that they give at NYU if you were there every day all day.
So that's amazing. So who's more depressed about the state of their industry, TV writers or fiction writers?
I think probably TV writers. I think that I don't think AI is a big of an existential threat to, like, fiction writers and poets and everything as it is TV writers. It just doesn't seem as urgent.
Right.
But I think that, you know, the publishing industry is fucked like every other artistic industry. So it's got its own problems.
Oh, well, wow. I'm excited to sounds hear so about cool. all your adventures in straight Paris.
Well, you know, win in Paris.
That's right. Okay, good. Anything's allowed. It stays, stays in Paris.
That's right. But no, it's great. I've been, you know, writing another book with the program, and you know, I've got to read a bunch of shit, so I'm staying busy. It's a lot of fun. I've actually got to turn in my thing later today.
What's the book about? The new book.
So it's based on a pilot that I wrote a few years ago that didn't go anywhere. About a clown who is dying, and he's trapped in the middle of a small town somewhere with this band of misfits and people. His circus has been abandoned and went bankrupt. And it started out as just a pilot of like that thing. But now I've decided, as I've been getting into it, that it's more of he's writing more of his autobiography as he's dying and kind of looking back on his life. And so that's
love
what I
it love that it the dying cool. clown what dying a great clown. What a great metaphor for all of our existences. Well, Kirker, you've been so generous with your
time. I don't
time.
Get it.
Yes, no, you kidding. Do you gonna get it. You were brave enough to come in for Johnny's, which we always love. And also, I understand that you're going to be part of the next portion of our show, a portion we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh. Is that you guys?
It is.
You know, my God. You wouldn't believe
it, but it is. And our fans love hearing us talk about it.
Well, we say that, yeah.
Thank you for noticing. So this week's top five, this was my topic here, and it is top five monologues of all time. So I'll just get right into it. My number five monologue of all time is I Drink Your Milkshake. There Will Be Blood. Just I love that movie, and I honestly had to choose between that monologue and his monologue when he arrives in a new town with his son and business partner HW, because there are many great monologues in that movie, but I chose I Drink Your Milkshake. Number four, I'm just calling it Tebow's Promise. Tim Tebow, former quarterback for the Florida Gators. There was a game in 2008 that they lost, that they were supposed to win. They were thinking that they were going to go undefeated that year. After the game at the press conference, Tim Tebow clutched the podium and said, "I am sorry, but I promise to you that you will never see a team work harder than this team. You will never see anyone push anyone harder than I will push this team." It was a great monologue. They went on to win the national championship. So that was awesome. Number three for me is Quint's USS Indianapolis speech from Jaws, which is just one of the, just such an amazing little sidestep in that great movie where he gets in depth about how he was in the World War II ship that delivered the bomb and they got sunk by torpedoes and had to fight off sharks. Number two, I'm calling Your Move, Chief, from Good Will Hunting. Yes. Robin Williams' speech on the bench in Boston Common to Matt Damon. That monologue makes me tear up every time I watch it. It's so awesome.
Yes.
And number one, Goldie, you could probably predict this. It was a loose cutting from The Outsiders.
Oh, boy.
By Brian Attean.
Good day, Mr. Kubrick.
Good day, Mr. Kubrick.
You know I have it as number one as well.
Forever number one. Okay, that's my list.
I ain't going walking in.
So, Kirker, why don't you give us your top five?
All right, I told JC when she told me this that it was my number one was probably going to be the monologue that's been in my head since I was a child saying you're not good enough.
Just so good.
I skipped every. I just did movies.
Sure.
I didn't go with anything. I don't know any sports.
It's all fair game.
And this one is really new, like within the last year, number five. But I saw it and I watched it at home and then I rewound it, watched it again. And I've watched it on YouTube so many times. There's a movie called Pearl. It's a horror movie that just came out. And Mia Goth, the actress, has this 8-minute monologue where she talks about, like, she's pretending she's talking to her husband who's not there, who's gone off to the war. And she's completely insane. And I mean, she's murdered people. It's a horror movie. The camera stays on her for about 8 minutes, and it is some of the greatest acting that I have seen, in the past, 5 years. And I don't know if it'll stand the test of time or whatever, but right now
I got to see that. I love horror movies too.
I'm blown away by it. Well, it's a sequel. So watch X first.
Oh,
and then watch Pearl.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
Mia Goth plays two characters in X. And then Pearl, she plays one of those characters from earlier in time. It's great.
Awesome.
Number four is the Jason Robards regret monologue in Magnolia.
Nightmare
dying, and he's talking about regret and how he fucked up his life and his kids and had affairs. And
that's a great one.
So great. Number three, Alec Baldwin, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes, yeah. we have crossover.
Yes.
Number two, I also had Robert Shaw and Jaws with the Indianapolis speech. And then number one, I didn't know what to do with number one. So I just said every cast member in the movie Network.
Because
Ned Beatty has that The World is a Corporation speech, and and Peter Finch has his, and Beatrice Straight won an Oscar for this monologue. It's a movie of monologues.
Yes.
Network, all of them.
Well done.
Yeah, this, great those are great.
List. Great list. JC, what do you got?
I'm next. Okay. My number, I feel like very down the middle. So number five, very obvious, Liam Neeson in Taken.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know who you are.
Sure. Yeah. yeah. Certain set of skills.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number four.
Here's how I would respond to that. No, you don't.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, okay.
You've You've already given your response to this, which is good, right? Oh,
yeah. Or no, you, well, that was that's if you I were have your, I have your child. Okay. Yeah. Did you take? You didn't take the dog, though, right? No. Oh, okay.
Number four, Devil Wears Prada. Meryl Streep, the blue monologue when yep. when yeah, love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, love Meryl, love Meryl.
I love that scene. I learned so much from that one scene. Here's our crossover, Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah.
Coffees for Closes.
Yep.
Number two, Walter White in Breaking Bad. I'm the one who knocks. It's that transition where you realize he is a scary and powerful guy, from like a weak guy with cancer to a very scary man. He's love an amazing it. Actor. And number one, maybe the most obvious, You Can't Handle the Truth. From A Few Good Men.
It's a good one. Good list. Goldie?
I made a last minute audible to just avoid the obvious overlap with Brian Ateen.
No.
Oh, he always does this.
Number five, I Have Bullet Ball.
What is that?
If you go on YouTube and look at Bullet Ball,
okay.
there was a contestant on a show called American Inventor.
Okay.
His invention was something called Bullet Ball. By the way, I take credit for popularizing this clip because I was working on the Showbiz show with David Spade. I watched American Inventor. I found this. I put it on TV with commentary, and then everyone found it after. I discovered Bullet Ball.
Yeah. I bought one for the Cleveland showroom.
Yes, you bought it, and yes.
Wait.
And you,
yeah, I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Thanks, Danny.
But number four, Any Given Sunday, the inches we need are all around us.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
I love it. That one inch.
Number three, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, your good friend, Steve Martin, just having met Del Close, he can endure anything.
Del Griffith.
God.
Wait a minute. So you're giving it to Steve Martin's angry thing instead of John Candy's sympathetic thing in return?
Yes.
Awesome.
I thought when he just tees off on John Candy about
not Steve's rental car rant.
Oh
no.
A fucking Chrysler. A fucking Buick.
Number two is we've talked about this before, the trip. Your Michael Caine is wrong. You're doing it all wrong.
That's great.
And this, here's my audible. Ben Affleck in Boiler Room.
That was good.
I Have Everything. And best of all, kids, I'm liquid. It's sort of a ripoff of Alec Baldwin and Glengarry, but it's so friggin' good.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and we omitted Greed is Good, which I almost put on the list because that's also a great speech from Wall Street.
Greed, for lack of a better word,
yeah,
is good.
Greed is right. But Goldie, so just end the suspense. Did you have a teen at number one?
I did, yeah. So I just took him off because I didn't. That's
why, well, God forbid we have something in common and bond over something.
We just did. I agreed. It's number one, but for our listeners, it's not.
Oh, all right. Well, those were great lists. Yeah. And Goldie, what do we got next week?
So next week is the top five songs that you hated when they came out that you now love.
Oh.
This works for me because I was thinking of one the other day. Okay, that's a great list. And in addition to that top five next week we are going to be talking with Josh Robert Thompson, incredibly talented voiceover artist.
Yes.
His Morgan Freeman is so good that they hire him when Morgan Freeman is not available.
With Morgan signing off on
with it. Morgan saying, yes, this guy can do it. So
AI.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have Josh Robert Thompson.
But he's done just hundreds of great voices for Family Guy over the years. So we're incredibly excited to talk to him. And we were Kirker. Thank you so much for doing the Johnnies, for doing Top 5,
amazing,
for sharing all your stories with us, and for your excellent field reporting on the So You're Going Bald SOG gate.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. This was so much fun, and I'm always on the lookout for Goldie's book everywhere I go.
Good. We love you. You've made us laugh many times over the years, so thank you for that.
Thank you so
and
much.
Now we are going to end our show, as we do every week, on a high note. Gamel and Pross did it again, a little longer than we'd hoped for. I'll go first. Mine's quick. My high note is our dog, Muggsy. So Muggsy is 18 years young, a little Pekingese who Tal rescued literally from the streets of L.A. She's a, just a real trooper. The little dogs live longer. Muggsy recently has been going through some back issues. She lost her ability to walk a little bit. Mm-hmm. And recently she was on medication for that constipated her. So Tal literally has to reach into her asshole and pull the shit out.
Oh my God.
But Muggsy is still here with us. God bless her. Oh. We're trying to enjoy every moment with her. So she is my high note before she is no longer with us.
Goldie?
Well, I'll follow the dying dog. Thanks. Great intro. I just want to give a shout out to my good friend, John Voigtman, who turned 50.
Happy birthday.
I think he listens to this. I don't know. But I would not have gotten through college in the ensuing years without his friendship and support. And he's just been a wonderful part of my life. He's the best man at my wedding. And I just want to say happy birthday.
Yes.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Have you ever pulled the shit out of his asshole?
Not yet.
No, but there's still time.
Yeah. And my high note is Stu is home. But
Stu
not from...
is back. Stu is back. It's going to be trouble.
But not as long as we thought, because he got the call for Sublime. So before he goes out back on tour with Dom, he's going out with Sublime in between. So
I don't practice Santeria.
Hey.
Well, that's a great high note.
In the front row. You do, though. You practice Santeria.
Yeah, we've seen you do it. All right.
Lie.
That was such a fun show.
Really,
thanks
was.
Again to Kirker Butler for being so awesome. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Oh, God damn it. I guess we will. I don't know.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
I don't practice Santeria, and I da 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 dee.
Hey!